Harper Perennial and Harper Audio present White Hot Light, 25 Years in Emergency Medicine by Frank Heiler. Read by Gary Bennett. 1. I don't think we are ready to die, any of us, not without being escorted. J. M. Coetzee. The boy. When they brought him in, he was almost alive. He was a handsome boy in his early teens, and I saw this first because he was nearly unmarked. He was brown and slim, and we stripped him immediately, and he lay still under the lights. The gunshot wound itself wasn't bleeding, and it stared at us from his chest. A little blue circle, an open eye. I thought of my son. I thought of him immediately. The young surgery attendant was there early, thin and lean and hungry, well-trained and arrogant and fast, and he has economy and grace, and he looks through me as if he doesn't know who I am. I don't care, I'm indifferent to him, but he is sharp and hard and quick, and sometimes that is what you need. He tried to save the boy. "When did you lose pulses?" he said to the paramedic. "On the way in," she answered. So he acted, right then, without waiting for anything or anyone. There was beauty in his ruthlessness. He stepped forward, poured iodine on the skin, put on a pair of sterile gloves, took the blade in his right hand, and opened the boy's left chest with a single, astonishing stroke from his sternum to the bedsheet. Flesh parts to a scalpel effortlessly, like the wave of a hand. "Open the thoracotomy tray," he said over his shoulder as the others arrived. I was standing behind him. I could see exactly what he was doing, because the light was bright and lit up the tissues. The wound was bloodless. It should have come alive with little points from the capillaries, but it was clean and dry, and so I knew. He took the scissors and inserted one of the blades between the ribs down low by the bedsheet. Then he lifted his hand up to the sternum again, and there was the lung, pale and gray, with a few yellow beads of fat clinging to it. By then the tray was ready. He put in the rib spreader and turned the crank, and the boy's ribcage opened like a flower. Dark blood poured from his chest to the floor. When I was young and still a student, I once went to my advisor's lab. He was doing basic research on cardiac arrest, trying to find ways to keep the brain alive for a few more minutes. Ambition is so vulnerable to the passage of time. We remember it, we can even still feel it. But there was no solution that could be injected into the vessels that would preserve brain function, no technique that would revolutionize CPR or raise the dead with their memories intact. Instead, there were dozens of dogs. The dogs were from shelters, and they were young, because older dogs could skew the data. He didn't know their ages exactly, but if you know about dogs, you can guess and be close enough. The dogs were brought out from their cages on a leash and led to the room. They were afraid and trembling, as if they were at the vet's. Starting an IV in a dog is no different than starting an IV in a human being. His graduate assistant would start an IV and inject a sedative. It took a few minutes. They held the dog on the table as it grew unsteady and finally lay down, and then they gave it pentothal to put it out forever. They intubated the dog, taping the long tube to the dog's nose, and attached the cardiac monitors. And then they flipped it on its back and shaved its chest and performed a thoracotomy. When the dog's chest was open, they would cross-clamp the aorta, stopping blood flow to the brain. Then the measurements would begin. My advisor was not changing their fates. They were from shelters and would have been euthanized in any case. But I could see that it troubled him anyway, as he soothed them on the table and spoke gently.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?